Yeah, I think of my wife when I hear that song. I don't know why. Good morning. It's Hot and Cold Saturday morning. It's me, Tom, and it's overcast. And I started yesterday thinking, I watched the weather Thursday night to plan out my day for Friday as to what possibly could happen that the weather would throw at me. I listened to this guy. His name is Chris. He's the weather guy. And he said it was going to be okay in the morning. And so I had stuff in the driveway. You know, I'm getting ready. We're going to have a busy day. And we had a truck and a trailer loaded. I pull it all out, you know, because we're going to rock and roll. As soon as the crew arrives, I got an early start. I was there doing stuff. And it starts, this stuff is coming out of the sky. It's little droplets of liquid. So I stopped everything, and I took the truck and the trailer myself over to the shop and unloaded it before the rains commenced. And the whole day was like that weather-wise. But we got everything done. And so the Saturday morning ritual that you have put up with for 5 months now of my sitting here and saying, "Oh, we're going to be moved soon," is almost over. We were inspected by the state of Maine this week, and we're approved to make the move. And I'm on the downhill. There ain't much left. If you go to my shop, the floor is actually swept clean. Some odds and ends left, but the lion's share of the stuff, except for the cars for sale, are over there. And everything, I kind of know where things are generally, but everything is in total disarray to the degree that, you know, okay, we're moving this week. I've said to myself, "Tom, move it, get the stuff out." And I'm moving stuff over. And then of course I need a bolt or a nut or a can of something. Okay, where's that? And I'm back and forth. And then I realize, oh, you know what? There's that closet in the back there. We didn't empty that out yet, and it's just. But I can see the end, with three notable exceptions, which I will put out here in Radio Land, and I'm sure Pete will call and talk to us in detail about next hour. Of things that still have to go bye-bye that I'm not taking with me if I can avoid it. One is we have an 8-foot by 12-foot insulated shed shell. It's not sided. It doesn't. It has an insulated ceiling, but we didn't put a peaked roof on it because we made an 8-foot-tall building. And if we put the roof on, it would be too high. You couldn't put it on a trailer. If somebody's interested in that, it's mostly R40 floor walls. They're going to get a heck of a deal. I've got way more money in it than it is under $1,000 at this point for an insulated shed shell with a door. And I'm throwing in a window. By golly. But it's got to go bye-bye today or Monday. It just has to go. Or it's going to my house. It's going to my house to replace my old shed. I made it that size on purpose that if I didn't have somebody interested in it, I just don't want to move it right now. I got too much going on. But it's on 4x4 pressure-treated skids. The floor is pressure-treated. It's quite something. And it's very strong. What's the other? And then I have what appears to be probably it's at least 10 feet, if not 12 foot stack of miscellaneous, various thicknesses, various size foam building panels. And if somebody wants them, come get them. They're free. I've got them on Craigslist still for sale for $150. They were $400. They were $600 before that. You got to come take them. Right away. We can't, and you got to take them all. And you would need a trailer. And then we have tires. I can't believe how many tires I've accumulated, and they're all good. There's not one, any that were bad, we got rid of, and we've kept the good ones, and I don't want to move them. And none of them fit Priuses. So if you got a Prius, don't come thinking you're going to get a Prius tire. But I'm going to have Pete call next hour, and he can tell us what sizes we have. I didn't get around to doing that yesterday. So So anyway, that's all the getting the dregs down to the minimum here. So that's all I got. So much for show preparation, huh? it's just been, yesterday was the big move in terms of the heavy stuff, stuff that took up a lot of room. It's all over the new place. And now we're just, pick up loads of odds and ends. And my weekend, hopefully, please don't visit me this weekend. Please. I beseech you. Don't come to see me. I've got to try to get stuff put away and sorted out. So when we do make the move next week, the official move, I know where something is. So we're just trying to get everything set up again in the new location. And it's going slow because there's people need something on a car, and I'm trying to stay ahead of that, and I'm not. But we're trying. So, Jack, if you're listening, Jack from Warrington, I will get to your car next week. I haven't forgotten you. I believe you have a backup car or two, so I'm hoping at least there's a part on order. And I should have called you, but I haven't. And, of course, through the midst of all this, we got all kinds of tank orders, which is good. Excuse me, I guess, except all our stuff is in boxes somewhere. So, anyway, I tell you what, I'm going to give the phone number, I'm going to give the text number, and I'm going to take a break. It's phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. Why don't we take, do we do another? What are we going to do? Let's get another bluegrass tune out of the way. I mean, just to get the, at 8:15 in the morning, maybe you haven't had your coffee yet. You need to just get the adrenaline going and the blood moving enough that you're able to get the coffee. And this might help. If not, well, it's at least you got to hear some banjo music. It's Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Stay there. We'll be right back. Now we're back. It's 8:19. It's Hot and Cold on Saturday morning. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. And we have neither right now, so I guess I'll tell you about getting lost in the glorious state of Maine. I don't like finding myself lost, and it's not a big deal anymore because you have GPS and you have all these things to help you. And I had to head down to the Waldoboro area this week. So I got my wife, we went for a ride, and I was picking up some windows for our new office. And I think it was Google Maps. I got on Google Map or MapQuest, one of the, I'm not sure which one. I think it was Google Maps. And I print out directions to where I'm going, right? And, the direction, I kind of know where I'm headed. You're going to go to Liberty. You're going to head down through Liberty, which is the convenient shortcut then, rather than going down Route 1. Because I wasn't out at the coast. I was inland a bit. So the first thing, you go down on Route 3 and you turn on to, I think it's 173, and then you hang a right onto 220, which takes you down basically to Waldoboro. So I'm looking at the directions as I'm going, and then you go down Route 3, 173. Get to 220, it says turn left. Well, if you turn left, you drive into somebody's house. So I turn right because I see the sign, and now I'm questioning myself. Did I miss something? Was I supposed to go a little bit straighter? Or what? So I go miles down the road, I turn around, come back. I got to check. I'm questioning. I knew this road went to Waldoboro, but I mean, it's in writing. It was on the internet. It was in writing on the internet. It's got to be right. And of course it was not. So I turn around, I head back again. Okay, well, you have 10 minutes. It's not a big deal. 5-10 minutes, wasted time. So then I miss a turnoff. And now I am lost. And there's nobody, I mean, what is it? It's rush hour, 5-6 o'clock in Jefferson, Maine, Washington, Maine. Nobody out anywhere. I didn't see any stores to stop. So I'm going to get out my cell phone. I got my iPhone here. I know I can track where I am. And I have Google Maps on my iPhone. So So I open it up, and it doesn't show me where I am. Shows the area I'm in, but then I have a little dot that shows where I am, and I knew where I had to be roughly. So I'm flustered, and I'm looking for a place to turn off, and I'm not finding. You know, I don't want to block somebody's driveway. So finally, I had the presence of mind that, you know what? I have two map programs on my phone, and I know I've used one that showed me where I was. It worked as a GPS, and it's Apple Maps, which works extremely well. So I was able to, you know, scroll out and see the big picture, so to speak, and realize I was like 5 miles off of where I should have been, and found my way to where I needed to get to. And of course, I hadn't charged my phone up, and I was running the battery down, and I'm thinking, okay, either I'm going to kill the battery before I get there and be lost again, or I'm going to break down on the way home. How reliant have I become having my phone with me at all times, or you, I, us collectively, that has become such an integral part of travel. For me, it is. It's for the music. I don't really usually use the map thing. But if I'm by myself, I've got the tunes playing in the car. But anyway, so it goes. I found them, got great deal on Windows. I've been amazed. I shouldn't tell this because it's a secret that I've used more than once, but Facebook Marketplace in some ways seems to supersede Craigslist. Not completely, but it really, I've gotten three amazing deals on Facebook Marketplace that kind of intrigued me. The frustrating part for me is it's on Facebook, which I'm not a fan of, other than it is convenient. And obviously a lot of people use it, and they put the good baggins right there. So that's all good stuff. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. And, I've been, we sold a couple of cars yesterday, and one of them had we kind of knew this was a thing, and we hadn't gotten to it because we've been moving, but on the back of the Prius, there's a spoiler, like a little mini fin. It's more, I think, decorative than maybe it's got to be more than decorative because of the aerodynamics of the car. But it was loose, and somebody had attempted to glue the thing down, didn't do a very good job. So I'm going to glue it down, right? And I brought it in the shop yesterday after the sale. They're picking the car up today, and I'm looking at it. I'm messing with it a little bit. I'm like, something's not right here, and I'm picking it. I can actually lift the spoiler, and I can see there's a stud comes down from the spoiler into the car, and it would have a nut on it, and it's obvious there's no nut on it. So I pull all the trim off. There's five threaded connectors. There's one nut holding the whole thing on. So it's kind of amazing it didn't blow off, that one didn't loosen up because it was loose. So that's all well and good. It's easy. It's an easy fix. You know, it took a little thinking to get the covers off and everything, the plastic covers, but not a big deal. Except I need four fasteners for this thing, and I've moved all the fasteners. I've got containers full of Prius fasteners. They are everywhere. You could walk 5 feet in any direction normally, and there they are, and they're all gone, except for the I have a little tool tray that I carry. And I said, you know what? I bet they're in there. I could find some. And sure as shooting, I just kind of chuck stuff in there. You know, I'll need that nut sometime right there. I'll put it right in there because it'll be right there. And there it was, four of them. And screwed the thing down. Didn't have to glue it. I don't mind using adhesives, but I don't want to use them if I don't have to. So we shall. That was pleasant. Speaking of adhesives, I have never tried it. I thought it was too expensive, and I was looking at it this morning, and I changed my mind. I've got some of the stuff they sell on TV, Leak Seal, you know, the guy who has the boat with the screen bottom, and he sprays it with this stuff, and then he takes the boat out and goes an alligator-infested shark waters. So I've got some because I use it a lot for rocker panels. If I'm doing a repair on a rocker, if you use undercoating, and a lot of folks use undercoating and think it works well, and it really is kind of permeable to water. So after I do any rust repair, and I primed it and painted it, well, I usually just prime it, and then I've been hitting it with these leak sealers, and then I undercoat it to protect that one from the other. And we're into the weather now where it's warm enough, it cures pretty quickly anyway. And then I paint it. So it's not smooth like regular paint because it's got all this stuff that's kind of lumpy, but it's down on the rocker anyway. And if there's an area where you want to have some thickness and protection and it is not really visible, that's the area. So my process evolved, and I'm going to try the leak seal. I've been using a Rust-Oleum sealant that is similar, and I'm looking at the two of them. I'm saying, well, you know, they're about the same price. So why don't I give this stuff a try? The guy's on TV. How could it possibly not be good if it's on television, huh? So we're going to give it a go. I will report back to you next week as to what I think of the product. The Rust-Oleum product has been fair to good. The leak seal, we'll tell you next week what we think. Let's do this. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I called you a couple months back, and I'm sure you're not going to remember the call, but it was about I had an apartment with a gas stove that had an electric start that was snapping every minute or two.
Yeah.
And you had told me that probably what was happening was that, because it was showing that I had a hot neutral, and that probably the wires had been, at some point, it's an old house, it had just been changed, either out of the box or right there at the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled the outlet, and the hot wire was where it was supposed to be. It was on the brass side.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this light indicator can't be giving me a false reading. So somewhere upstream, apparently, something's happened. It's the old fuse box, so I didn't open it up. I just went ahead and reversed it. So I had the hot side on the neutral and the neutral on the hot.
Mm-hmm.
And the test light said that everything was fine, and the snapping actually stopped. So somewhere along the line, somebody must have done some work, you know, between that outlet and the box. And when they, I'm assuming, put the wires back, maybe they, at that point, switched them accidentally, and then that would reverse.
Yeah.
That would change the power flow from that point on.
You could not track back from that outlet to where it tied to something else? This, I assume,
you know,
is a Romex?
It's a, you know what? It was on the third floor in the walls.
Yeah.
and it was just, it would have been, I would have had to have just destroyed the house, you know, to
get it. Is it its own circuit? Or is it?
It doesn't
have its own breaker, obviously.
No. It's those screw-in, those holes screw-in, and there's like two for the entire apartment.
Yeah.
It needs to be working.
Yeah. I would be putting a note downstairs on the fuse box and probably behind the stove just in case, you know, for future reference if somebody gets in there, because, you know, this is, it solved your problem, which is good.
Yeah,
and it's safe to the degree that it's wired properly, but it's not color coded properly,
right?
And that gives me a little bit of a wobbly knees.
Yeah,
but at least that part is safe. I would think about having a tag or something tied to that outlet, the cord that's plugged in, maybe. So anybody who comes after you at least understands what's going on there.
Right, yeah, you're right. I probably should have just got some black tape and taped the white wire over with black, and then maybe,
well, you know, the good news is most people who do this kind of work will have a tester like you have, and they'll see that it is done right, and they'll just say, you know, somebody wasn't paying attention to the color code.
Right, right.
I'm glad that you found the problem.
Yeah.
That's unnerving, though, you know, because you have to think, well, what else did they do? And have you checked your other outlets to see if they're okay?
I did, and I found one other one that was in the same condition, and I just told them that just not to use it. It wasn't being used.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know,
yeah,
I didn't want to start. I'm not an electrician, and I, you know, I took it as far as I was comfortable taking it.
Sure, sure.
You know,
well, good. So. It's good. You know, at least you know what's going on there. And
right.
At some point, you know, if and when it comes time to rewire, it can be addressed properly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But all right, Tom.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Yeah, I do remember to call. And unfortunately, there's a lot of folks who fancy themselves as being capable of doing electrical work. And, you know, in reality, you could possibly be okay. But when something basic like that is not done right, it gives me reason to want to stop and just rewire everything. And if you have to hire that out, which most of us do, it gets expensive real fast. But given some of the alternatives, it's probably not a bad thing. Let's do this. We'll go right there. Mr. Fat Swaller is with us this morning. We'll be right back. It's hot and cold. Hey, we're back. It's 8:37 here at the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold. Good morning again. I'm Tom. I just want to tell you about my friend Alan over at General Appliance and Brewery. He's open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. He's on Center Street. And the phone number is 989-4341. If you need parts, service, you need refurbished stuff, you need new stuff, he's got it all. He's got gas appliances on the floor, gas refrigerators. I don't know how he does it. He fixes them, too, which is really, I don't know how he does it. much exotic technology going on there. General Appliance on Center Street in Brewer, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. But you can call as well at 989-4341 if you're looking for guidance. And you will get that guidance. And all you have to do is know that number, 989-4341. So I got a text here from Dave about rockers. He's got one of our cars and is working on rockers. And it's an ongoing thing, Dave. You know, the thing with rocker panels is the stuff we got on the roads kind of aggravates a lot of situations. And I'll be honest, I'm still sorting out the best process to mitigate the problem. We have a car that we took back in trade, which at very least is a parts car, but the it's got rocker damage. It had no prior damage when we sold it, and it's got holes, man. And 2 years from when it was sold, a lot of traveling, but still. I've been struggling with the best process to minimize the subsequent damage. That's what I'm trying to say, and that's where the leak sealer comes in. May or may not be the solution. We have a couple of things we're working on that I'm not going to discuss now because it'll conjure up too many negative comments. But we're going to be trying it And really, anytime you do this, you have to then put it through a main winter or two to see how it stands up. And I do tell folks who buy cars from us or buy cars from anybody, one of the spray-on treatments, like fluid film, there's other ones. Bangor Radiator has a different process. There's a few of them kicking around. And they're yearly applications because whether it's a quote-unquote permanent solution or it is a semi-permanent solution like fluid film, it really needs to be maintained and touched up. And fluid film begats that you kind of have to touch it up every year. And I think that's a good thing because somebody gets underneath the car or truck and looks at it and sees where the coating might have worn off and how to protect it. And it's not a crazy expense. I mean, if you have a car like a Prius, you can do it yourself with spray cans. Or if you have a bigger vehicle, you have an air compressor, you can easily do your own vehicle. So, for what it's worth, let's go over to line two. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello. Or not. Let's try line one. Good morning. Oh, Godfrey. Let's try that again. is that line one? Oh, it's line two flashing. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
I have a 2002 Subaru Forester, mm-hmm. and the head gasket is gone. Now, I know every guy I tell that to, their face drops down.
Yep.
What is that? Is that terrible?
It's not great because you know, Subaru's notorious for head gasket problems, and but somebody who works on Subarus does head gaskets all the time. Usually when they do the head gaskets, they'll change the water pump, the timing belt, and any seals that need to be replaced, because these cars, when they do go, they need those things or should have those things done at the same time. So it's probably about a $1,000 deal.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
I love the car.
Yeah, you know, if the car's
white,
in...
And I love it, and it's just a... You know, and I don't drive 500 miles a week, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
and my God, it aggravates me, you know. That
well, you should check with folks.
Guy, well, why is it that every guy that I told, my son or a friend of ours came from California, and I said head gasket, their face drops,
it's,
and they sigh.
Well, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it is in that it's something. If your son or I said I'm going to replace the head gasket, we know we're in for it. It's a lot of work. It's not something we do every day. People who work on Subarus do this every day, and I know there's I know there's folks in the Down East area who maintain them, and I would just check around with your neighbors and friends to see who does it, because you want to have somebody who knows what they're doing, because Subaru head gaskets are a little different, but it's not a big deal. I mean, it's going to be about at least a grand. And
well, I know
it's cheaper than a car payment.
It might be $1,000, but I figure, hey, I don't care. But
how many miles?
As long as and then they'll be okay. The car will be okay after that.
Well, they'll tell you that if they could check it over. How many miles on your car?
I don't even know. I tell you, I don't even know.
Okay. Well,
it's a 2002, and of course, I've had it for three years, but I don't drive it much. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to work or anything, and I drive it to town or, you know.
Is it still running?
30 miles a week. That's it.
What's it doing right now that they diagnosed it?
Well, what happened was the week before there was an oil leak.
Okay.
And it happened just like that.
Yep.
And it was fixed. And then the following week, it just died in front of the credit union. I mean, I pulled up and right in, and the cars couldn't back out or pull forward. And I had to go in the credit union and get AAA to bring it down to the place. And I waited. I had my finger right to my temple. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I was going to shoot myself. And then I brought it to the guy, and he said, you know, he'll check it out. And don't worry, he'll check it out. And then I called him a week later because he has so many cars there. I think he has as many cars as you do.
Mm.
But I knew his grandmother, too, so... He's not a bad guy, and he gets the stickers and everything.
Yeah.
But he just said the other day, he just said it's a head gasket that probably costs around $1,000, and I just didn't know if it was bad, that bad, or what.
Well, I would ask him what he thinks of the rest of the car. I mean, because he's the one who inspects it. You know, we're looking at rust now and how many miles. It's always good to know how many miles are on your car. That's not an imperative, but... It is.
Rust around the brakes too. I think he was going to fix the brakes.
Yeah, and that's not a big deal. It's the body. It's brakes are replaceable. It's the body that you can't replace.
Okay.
So that's what you want to have him look at. But
yeah, okay.
I know there's a guy in Ellsworth. I don't know his name, who just does Subarus.
Oh really?
And he's on the Christian Ridge Road. I know that. I don't know his name. I'd have to check with my son. But he's really good. But I'm sure there might be somebody closer. And it's going to be if your mechanic has done them.
Only not too far from Jonesboro.
Yeah, but if your mechanic has done them, he's not quoting you a number that's crazy. So.
Oh, okay. So that's about what it cost. Okay, good.
Okay.
Okay, you're so great. Thank you, and I love your music.
Thanks. Bye bye. You know, here's the thing. I have had a couple of Priuses that we've dealt with that have had head gasket issues. And, you know, we buy cars at auction, and the car seems to run okay, and then you discover it has a head gasket. So what do? You fix it. Of course, the cars we're dealing with normally, we know everything else is okay. We had one that had a head gasket issue We had it inspected. We did all the work. We had it inspected, and then we discovered that we had a misfire, and it was due to a head gasket, and we replaced the head gasket. Obviously, you have to replace a lot of other things with the head gasket, but we did all that, and for me, it's just part of the deal. I don't want to have a customer have a problem like that. It's better it happens when I have it. It may not always. I had one once that it was a Scion, and the head gasket failed, or head gasket was failing. We didn't realize it, we took the car back. And the customer wanted we had another car they were interested in, so we just swapped cars, and everything was fine. And then we had that car repaired. But it happens. I mean, that's a thing on a car that will go. Subarus are notorious. You know, I'll be honest with you. I think Subarus are great cars. You get in them, you drive them, they work great. While they're running okay, they're awesome. At some point, when I deal with a Subaru, or I come up on a Subaru, I smell oil. Because they tend to weep oil. They tend to start to leak oil at some point in their life. The head gasket starts to go, usually around the same time. And I had one a friend of mine brought in. He wanted me to sell for him, for a family member. And I took it in for a sticker. I said, let's get it inspected. And they said, we can't sticker it. The head gasket's leaking. Now, the car was running okay. I could smell the oil as soon as he pulled in with it. And at that point, it got sold as is. Because it's just, for me, it was, what was it? Like an 08 Forester? It was a nice car. I enjoyed driving it there, but they seem to have a proclivity to having head gasket issues. They're fixable. Everything's fixable. It just takes time and money. And if everything else is okay, it's worth fixing. The guy who bought it was going to drive it till it had a, you know, till it really needed it. It wasn't terminal. But the guys who inspect for me didn't want to sticker it. And that's fine with me. I don't want to have to sell a car and have a problem like that. If it happens, either before or after the sale, we'll take care of it. But, you know, it's preferable to fix it ahead of time if you want to. I didn't want to. I don't deal with Subarus. I avoid them like the plague. I like Toyota products, occasional Honda product. But that's me. You know, I have my quirks. Hello, you're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm building an addition on my house, and the house is slab on grade, and it's got passive solar, and it's insulated quite well, but I wouldn't call it super insulated. Mm-hmm. And I'm researching the shallow frost-protected foundation designs.
Sure.
And one thing that I'm finding inconsistent is whether or not to insulate under the slab in the center of it.
Mm. Yeah, there's two schools of thought, as you found. One is to insulate completely under the slab. The other is to leave the center area uninsulated. Because what happens is if you have a building on top of this area, the center area has the least amount of heat loss. So it right. tends to be a little bit warmer there. From my point of view, I think it makes sense to do the whole slab, and I'll tell you why. Moisture. The idea of putting a building even on an inch of foam insulation physically decouples that concrete from the soil that's underneath. Obviously, it adds insulation value. So even in the center of the slab, where maybe in that core area, maybe it's 60 degrees underneath that floor. Well, that means, excuse me, that floor area is not quite as warm as the other areas where there might be insulation right adjacent to them. But more importantly, if there's any water that gets in underneath the floor, it's going to tend to have a little bit more potential to wake up. In theory, there should be a vapor barrier under there, but having an inch or two or three or even more of foam becomes a physical separation barrier as well for moisture, which just helps in the overall scheme of things. Keeping moisture out of the building is kind of important. And from my point of view, for what little bit you save on foam, I'm not sure it's worth the aggravation of, I mean, because you're going to be filling that extra, that void is going to get filled with concrete. If I was doing a building like what we did, a garage, and we wanted to have structure for, say, a lift or something. Yeah, well, maybe we wouldn't put insulation under that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a place where people are apt to be sedentary. You know, you're not jumping around, being real active at times. So I would want that floor to be insulated.
Yeah, and there's no concern with limiting the amount of heat escaping to prevent the frost under the edges of the
floor. Not really, no, because I think the building does that and the foam does that. And the other thing that comes into play here is not a heat loss issue, but a condensation issue in the summertime. If that's in intimate contact with the subgrade, it could be on a humid day you get condensation in that area of the floor. And I see that in the shop I'm in right now. It's a slab that was put in, I don't know, in the 60s or 70s. There's no insulation. And especially in the summertime, if it gets humid out, it flashes over and is wet almost instantly. It's amazing how quickly the whole floor of the 6,000-square-foot building changes and gets damp. And, you know, that's not good for flooring. It's not good for carpeting. It's not good for mold and mildew if you're living in that building.
Right. And I'd like to run PEX tubing in the slab to eventually use solar hot water to help heat the building. And
sure,
as far as the thickness of the slab for the passive solar coming through the windows and the heat storage of running the PEX through the floor, mm-hmm, I was thinking 6 inches of concrete, and I know that's probably a lot. But what are your thoughts on having an adequate amount of thermal mass in the slab where it is the finished floor in the house?
Yeah, I would say 4 to 6 inches is where you should be. The rule of thumb is that the tubing should be an inch and a half from any surface. So if you have half-inch tubing, excuse me, and you've got inch and a half on top and bottom, you've got 3.5 inches there. So 4 inches would be a minimum, and 6 inches is better. It's going to hold heat better. We're going to run out of time here, but I'll tell you a quick story. Years ago, I did a radiant floor for a friend of mine, and we put the tubing, he had a concrete slab, but we put the heat storage underneath the slab in 2 feet of sand, and we got storage capacity. It took forever to warm up, but it also took forever to cool down, and it actually, the heating system conked out a couple times. It always happened around Christmas Eve. I'd get a phone call. Well, it's 65 degrees in the house. It's not warming up. Well, there was a freeze-up is what happened, and they didn't know about it for a week. It took a week to get to that point. I think a 6-inch slab is a good compromise. It gives you a day or so probably worth of heat storage, and you can do the calculations in terms of how much heat you can store. More mass is better than less, and going between 4 and 6 inches, I would lean towards the heavier, the 6-inch, especially if you're trying to do some solar thermal. Even though you may only bump it up, say, let's say 3 to 5 degrees on a sunny day, the equivalency of storage capacity is fairly substantial compared to, say, a heat storage tank full of water. So that would help you a lot in terms of getting what you want for a building that could be reasonably carried with some solar. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll take some more calls. We've got the news, and this one's been going through my head all week as I've moved stuff. And yesterday was like 5.7. I check on my iPhone. It's 5.7 miles yesterday. It was 5.2 on Thursday. But here we go. Okay, we're back. It's 9:06. It's hot and cold. Hour number two of the big radio broadcast that happens every Saturday morning right here on The Voice of Maine, covering pretty much the entire state of Maine, maybe parts of New Hampshire. We get the stray New Hampshire call once in a while, and we have gotten them from Canada, too, as well. So there. Go figure. Phone number is 1-800-966-1010. Let's do that again. 1-800-966-1039. Or the text line is 601-207-4478. No text messages this morning. I got one from Dave on my text line, my cell phone, but nothing on the official Voice of Maine text machine right here next to me on my right. So, anyway, let's go to the phones. Let's not dawdle. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah. Good morning, Tom.
Hi,
Frank from Norwich Walk. Heard you talking about me this morning. Just want to let you know your friend 08 Subaru is doing just fine.
Oh, good.
Fixed the hole in it. Got it inspected. I did do a rear strut on it. It was a little bit noisy, and it's fine.
Good.
I could talk to you forever. I've got a million questions, but let me just address one now as I'm driving on the road. I built a deck, pressure-treated lumber, about 12 years ago, and started getting some rot on it. Actually put a step stool through one of the 5/4 by 6 boards, and I called the supplier, and they agreed to give me replace 24 16 footers. I'm going to get those delivered pretty soon. How should I store that? Any special? Because I don't intend on using them all right away.
I would sticker them in, on someplace flat and keep them out of the weather. They, you know, the southern yellow pine is so quickly grown. It's a fast-growing material that if they're kept wet and green, they kind of stay flat. But as soon as they start to dry, they twist and turn. So the quicker they're screwed down to the deck, the better. Take the shape you want. Otherwise, they get kind of gnarly. And I find that with any lumber, not just pressure-treated. But pressure-treated is kept wet. Just because of that, I think, because it just is not a happy wood once it starts to dry. If it's
so
not,
don't let it get absolutely dry until I'm ready to screw it down.
Yeah, yeah. But I would sticker it.
Manipulate it.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Again, if I wasn't on the road, I'd have some other questions for you.
Okay. We'll be here next week too.
Great.
Okay, Brent.
Talk to you then.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya. Yeah, our phone number is 1-800-966-1039 over to line 2. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I was calling just to find out if you know where I could get a list of the cooperative extension services so I can have some soil tested. I'm in the Brunswick Thompson area.
I don't offhand, but I know the easiest thing would be to call the university in Orono. The number is 581-1110. And tell them you want to talk to Cooperative Extension, and they would put you in touch with the group that's closest to you, or tell you it may just be a statewide thing for doing soil testing, but it's I would start there, and certainly you can get online and Google them, but they have a lot of information online regarding that.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, good luck. excuse me, our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. A text line. Still no text. What is going? Maybe the text machine is broken. It's 601-207-4478. You never know. Could be that that's happening. And I mentioned last hour, I'll mention it this hour again. I got three things I need to dispatch from my place of business. Two of the three. Are you sitting down? You sit down right now, put your hands in the air, and listen to me. Pick up the vibrations. They are free. I need to make them go bye-bye. A number, of tires, all season, some snows, some studded. A lot, I think, would fit Camrys. For some reason, I've been inheriting Camry and Avalon-type tires. I don't use them because I sell Priuses for a living. And they're good. These are not balled on one side. They're not cupped, I don't think. You're welcome to come look. Want to take them off, fine. There must be, 15 or so that have accumulated in my shop. They make wonderful planters because they got great tread. It'd be a shame to use them as planters because these are good tires and they're indoors. They're not outdoors. And they got to go away. They're free. Come take them out of my sight. The other thing that is free to people who listen to this radio program, oh my goodness, how does he do it? I have a pile of nondescript building panels, different thicknesses, mostly 4x8 sheets. There might be some bigger ones. Stack is at least 10 feet tall. Come and take them all. You got to take them all. I'm not going to just dribble them out. They got to go all at once. Those two are free. And then if somebody is interested in an insulated storage shed, we'll talk. I've got a deal for you. You won't believe it. 8x12, mostly R40 with a door, insulated door. This is not a storage shed like you buy that you spend thousands of dollars on that is not insulated. It's wooden, and this is a little different. It is not sided on the outside. It doesn't need to be sided right away. It's exposed foam. You can take your time covering it. The inside, likewise, is not sided or sheathed or covered, and it has no roof. It has a flat ceiling that is insulated with foam and would need a stick-built roof put on top of it or metal put on top, whatever you want to do. I was going to do a peaked roof, and with a peaked roof, you could not put it on a trailer. But we have cranes. This would be worth the price of buying the stupid thing just to watch me use the cranes to put it on your trailer. It'll be that much fun. You could come and have fun with Tom on a Saturday or a Sunday. All right. Are you going to have the pest guy on anytime soon? Yes. As a matter of fact, Jim had been in touch, and I don't remember what day it was going to be, but I emailed him last night because, are you ready for this? Okay. I wasn't going to discuss this, but I am. It's borderline disgusting. Not turn the radio off because you're eating breakfast. Disgusting. Just disgusting. I worked late last night, and I get home, and usually I put TV on, and then I zonk out for an hour. Okay, so I'm on the sofa, and I wake up to something on my forehead. And I thought maybe it might be a ladybug because occasionally we have a ladybug in the house. And I reached on my, I went to scratch my forehead, and there's this bug, and I'm half asleep. There's a little coffee table next to me. I put it on the table, and I'm looking, and I see this thing moving around, and I hit it. And I thought, oh, it's a spider, and I hit it, and it just kept moving. So now it's got my attention. I get up. I think it was a tick. It was on my head, on my forehead. How it got on me, I was not in the woods yesterday. I wasn't around dogs. None of that. And so I took a picture of it, as I want to do anytime I have an unidentified critter, and I've sent it to Jim Dill, our bug guy, and we will have Jim on soon because we're in the season. And unless he's on vacation or something, I expect the email back from him today. But my wife was totally freaked out. Well, how did the tick get in the house? Do we have ticks in the house? No, we don't have ticks in the house. Apparently, the tick was looking for a place for blood, and God knows there's no blood in my head. You noticed that from listening to me talk on the radio. Anyway, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more phone calls. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Stay with this one, huh? Yes, 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 yes. Especially Saturday from 8 to 10 on The Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold. We're back. It's 9:20 here, and the phone number is 1-800-966-1039. That's 1-800-966-1039. It's like call in. Text line 601-207-4478. How far below? We got a text here. How far below are we for the spring? I don't know. We're below. I can tell you that. We will average out, though. A couple of years ago when you had the bugologist, I'm going to tell him that's a good title for him, the bugologist on your program. I thought I heard him say the Lyme disease was not a big concern in Washington County. Did I completely misunderstand? I don't know. We'll have to ask him when he gets here, which is not today, but it's soon. And I thought maybe we had a conversation. Maybe next weekend. I've sent him an email because of my bug thing. So I will be in touch with him this week, and we'll sort that out. We'll get them on soon because it's the bug season, and it's time to be paying attention. The black flies, you know, I thought, well, gee, it's cold out. Maybe the black flies are not going to be as bad, but they're starting to make their presence known, and I suspect the rain has not helped, even though it's been cool. Speaking of which, this is slightly unrelated to insects, but I need to mow my lawn. So the annual ritual of swearing at the lawnmower, which I have not done. Every year when I start the lawnmower, there's a fair bit of colorful language that emanates. So we know this. My wife and I know it. And last Sunday for Mother's Day, she says, you better not come in the house swearing at the lawnmower, which I had to just because she said that. But I was pretty subdued considering. I was just joking around. But it wouldn't start. It was turning over, but it would not start. I put fresh gas in it. And let me take the air cleaner off. We'll start with that, see what the air cleaner looks like. So I take the air cleaner off, and somebody's been rooting around in the air cleaner, and there's grass in there, and I've taken this stuff out. It wasn't grass. It was a dead mouse. Okay, well, we'll extract the dead mouse, and I will go get a new air filter, which I did this week. I got a new spark plug. I thought the spark plug looked like it should be replaced. I replaced it. And the mice had started to build a nest in part of the mower, so I cleaned that out. And I found that because they are critters and they have long teeth that they need to do something with, they chewed on some of the wiring, but it seems like all the wiring's okay because it'll hit, but it won't start. But they did a pretty good number on some stuff. So I've got to it's rained a little too much, and if all else fails, my friend Kurt is going to loan me his lawnmower tomorrow, and I will mow my lawn while I try to figure out what's going on with my machine. But it's interesting. And there's a solenoid, I think, that kills the fuel, and I don't know if that's acting up. It's a fuel issue, though. It's because I do have ignition. So I'm go through my troubleshooting guide. And I am going to clean all the electrical connections as well, just to make sure that it isn't building up resistance or something and not wanting to spark. But I don't want to be a lawnmower mechanic, and especially right now while we're moving. But it's right on schedule that it will not start. And I should have started a little bit earlier, but, you know, you think, well, it can't be every year that the lawnmower will throw something new at me. Well, the mouse thing was kind of new. And apparently dead mice don't make good air filters, although, you know, they are kind of furry. And this guy had lost enough body mass. How's your breakfast going? I have enough body mass that, you know, he wasn't occluding the system. But they had plugged up a whole bunch of stuff with leaves and things. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I got a question for you. I got 4 foot frost walls I just had poured, and I'm doing the drainage thing and going to put some styrofoam around it. And I'm also putting that tar around it. I know maybe I'm overkilling here, but I got extra tar. I was just wondering, there ain't going to be no problems putting it on the inside just to use it up, would it?
I don't think I would do that just because it kind of gives off hydrocarbons, and now it's kind of inside the building space, living space, even though it's underneath the floor. I would just, if you want to use it up, double up a little bit on the outside, or use it for something else. I wouldn't put it inside, though. I think I'd avoid that.
Okay, because all it is going to be a garage, and the floor is going to be over it. I'm going to just keep it under the ground. But
okay, well, a little bit less of an issue there, but it's not a big moisture issue anyway if it's a garage. So
okay. Okay, Tom, thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. Moisture, when we're doing buildings, we're trying to pay attention to what we have in the building with us if it's living space, and what we want to keep out. The big thing we want to keep out is moisture. So for any number of reasons, and if it's not for making things rot and the like, it's for keeping things like frost walls or basement walls from cracking. If moisture gets into a space that's not insulated well, it has the potential to freeze and thaw over a number of years and open a crack up in a wall. So it makes sense to do that. Let's see. We got a lawnmower suggestion deal here. A mechanic in a bottle, an ethanol-free gas. Yeah, I'm not sure. I ran it. Well, I did run it out of gas, but it could be. I'll give it a go. Either that, or I'm going to set it on fire. I might just do that. It's days like this that I appreciate electric lawnmowers, except electric lawnmowers don't give you the fumes and the insect protection that gasoline mowers give you. Although I can attribute my hearing loss to using a lawnmower. That, you know, it has struck me over the years. We've mowed lawns forever, whether it's a push mower or a riding mower, and we just kind of accept the noise that those machines make. And it really makes me wonder why there are not better muffler systems on lawnmowers. It's not the end of the world because I usually put on the noise-canceling headphones, but they are pretty loud. And you don't have to have a loud lawnmower because you're not going to get, you know, it's the motorcycle guys say that you got to have loud pipes or car drivers aren't going to see you because they, I'm not sure I buy that argument. And I don't want to argue the point, but you either see a motorcycle driver or you don't. The noise isn't necessarily coming at a time where you might know, you might avoid hitting them. I suspect that if somebody's being negligent about motorcycle drivers, loud pipes aren't necessarily the issue as much as the negligence of a driver on either side. But for lawnmowers, we don't need them loud, but they are. And certainly I suspect there's an economic thing there. And I've always looked at these machines and thought, why don't I get a universal car muffler and put it on, see how much I could quiet it down. But I've yet to do that. And in my spare time, right? Electric machines do get around that. And they are quite desirable from that point of view. If we could just deal with the insect part of it. What do we got? We got another message here. Same message. We got anything else? No. Okay. Our text line is 601-207-4478. As I sit here and read texts while I'm supposed to be talking. And of course the phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got to take a break. It is 8:29 and almost 8:30. Wait a minute. It's 9:30. Where did that first hour go? You know, you drink on the job, and that's what happens. You just can't – you lose track. Okay, we're back. It's 9:35 on the big radio broadcast. This is what you call the hot and cold thing on the Saturday morning on the Voice of Maine, and my name is Tom. And over on the secret governor's line 3 is Pete. Hey, Pete.
Good morning, Radio Land.
How are you, Pete?
I'm not great.
And why?
I stopped at a coffee and donut place this morning, and I asked for a black coffee.
Yeah.
The guy said regular, and I said no, black, and then he corrected it, and then I got my coffee, and I came here, and guess what? It's got cream and sugar in it. I couldn't even drink it. I had to dump it out. I don't know what the point of coffee with cream and sugar in it is. It doesn't taste like coffee.
You can tell Pete is already sweet enough. I mean, there's no need for any more sweetness than Pete. Gozy right there. Tell you what.
I'm going to have a sunny disposition for the rest of the day because of that
Mr. Perky right there.
Yeah.
So, Pete, I asked Pete to do an inventory on the tires that we have that we are giving away, Pete. Is that right?
Yeah, and I wrote down all the sizes, and they're mostly right, I think.
Thank you. So I'm going to run through the sizes real quick. You bear with me. We've got three 175/65/14s. We've got three on steel wheels 185/65/15s, which maybe we should keep because those are for Prius. But if somebody came in and needed them, we'd pass them along. We've got 1/205/65/15, 3/175/65/14. So we have two sets of 175/65/14s. Wow. Unless you count.
I didn't even catch that. They must be different tread or something, or they're in different piles. Yeah.
I don't know. 185/65/15, a 205/65/15. You're writing all these down out there in Radio Land? And then we have. We have three sets of 215/60/16s, two of those, and 205/65/15. We got a lot of tires over there.
We have accumulated a fair amount of tires.
And now, Pete, I did not solicit these tires. They just kind of accumulated. They were good tires, and we kind of hung on. I can't be blamed for this. That's what I'm going.
I'll give you credit. I can't actually pinpoint where any of these came from.
Okay.
They just showed up, and we eventually had these stacks of tires everywhere.
And this list is after Nat took a couple yesterday.
Nat did take a couple.
Yeah. So we still got quite a few left, and they're all good looking tires. I mean, these are not something you'd see by the side of the road on cleanup week. These are tires that have significant tread life.
They've got some life left in them, definitely.
Yeah.
This is the best episode ever. We're just rattling off tire sizes to the state of Maine.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, what the hell. But Pete, you know, also, just prepare, gird yourself, that pile of building the stress skin panels.
Oh, yeah?
Those are free. Did you know that?
What does that mean? I got to load them?
Yeah, well, yeah. You're there.
Those are free, and I'll put them on your trailer with the forklift, and then you do everything else, because they are heavy.
Yeah. So, but they're there, and they're not going to last, hopefully.
Yeah.
And
it's going to be a money-making day with all the stuff we're giving away.
Yeah. It's karma. There's some karma here.
It'll come back around.
You think so?
Not in the form of coffee, if you ordered correctly.
Apparently not. If you want, I'll pick you up a coffee on my way through. How's that?
No, that's all right. I got to be a martyr.
You're not going to be sunshiny then. You're not going to be your normal rosy disposition.
I didn't even really need the coffee. I was just down that way, and I thought I would get coffee. I've already had coffee, but it's just the fact that the coffee was wrong.
So what happens if you drink coffee with sugar in it? Do you just get too sweet and people shun you?
What's the point of coffee with cream and sugar, really? Like, it doesn't taste like coffee. It might as well be sugar milk with caffeine.
Well,
sugar milk with caffeine, that's a product right there.
Yeah.
Trademark.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll catch up with you later. You got anything else you want to give away?
Oh, I've got piles of your stuff that I'd give away if people could get in here before you do. But otherwise, no. I'm going to put, you know what, though, as far as cars go, I sold two last night.
Yeah.
So we're getting real low. I'm going to put the Vespa out.
Yeah.
If anybody out there is looking for a 50cc, beautiful red 2018 Vespa, you don't need a motorcycle license for it. It's a great little scooter. That is $2,399 today only.
Wow.
Excuse me.
Yeah, that's a $4,500 machine.
It sure is.
Well, I don't know how you do it. All right, P, I'll see you in a little while. Thank you.
All right, don't threaten me.
Okay. Okay. Bye. That's my son, Pete, right there. He keeps things interesting. So, and he'll be there all day today. So if you want to meet somebody different, go meet Pete. Our phone number, though, in the meantime, is 1-800-966-1039. Got a text message here. Tom, I put my radio hearing protection headphones on and listen to you. Now, let me get this right. Are you putting on the headphones so you don't listen, or are you putting on the headphones so you can listen? I will many times put on headphones as I lose my, you know, part of the reason I'm losing my hearing is because I get in here, I put headphones on. You work at the radio station, you wear headphones, and I got it cranked up to a certain level that's probably too much. So I think over the years of 30 years of doing the hot and cold radio thing, my hearing is slowly deteriorated, or I just might be getting old, but I'm going to blame it on the radio. Many times, especially like if I'm doing a phone call from home, I have a setup of voiceover IP on my computer, so I will put the headset on, and it's just, you know, if you get a bad connection or something, it's just a little bit easier to hear folks. So as I age, and speaking of aging, it reminds me of the Tim Conway character, Tim, who passed away this week at 85. He had a thing where he walked around with headphones on, one of his characters. So I've thought about that. I'm not quite there yet. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Can listen, of course. Okay. All right. Just making sure. You got the headphones on and they have noise cancellation. It could go either way. I just don't, you know, because there could be it could be a moment in time when I actually say something that's coherent and important. I'm not going to read the list of tires again. Just suffice it to say there are some Prius tires there that I'm still going to let go. If they don't go today, though, I'm putting them in my shop because I'll use them at some point. It's always convenient, though, when you have three of something. I'm not sure why that is. other than probably that we had a car that needed one tire, and we replaced all four, and the three came back to my shop. That could be what happened. That sounds like a logical explanation to me. So that could very well be how it worked out. But if you're interested, if you're looking for some tires, then we might have something that fits. Excuse me. Pete's got it written down now on a piece of paper. You could call him, and he can guide you at 888-866-8970 is that number. And I have gotten the remaining things I need for putting our sign up. We had an interesting conversation with my friends at the Department of Motor Vehicle. I had to be inspected for moving the location. When you change the location if you're a dealer in your license, you have to be inspected to make sure everything is there that is proper for being a licensed dealer. So we spoke on the phone before they came out, and he says, have you moved yet? I said, no, I can't move till you inspect me. Well, you have the sign up. And I put the sign up because if I put the sign up, I'm not there. I can't, it doesn't quite work. We have two locations then, and it gets confusing. So he says, that's kind of a catch-22, isn't it? I said, yeah, it kind of is. But all worked out. And I actually, you'll find this maybe hard to believe, but I enjoy dealing with the people at the Department of Motor Vehicles. They're actually, I deal with the same people all the time, so I kind of know them at this point, and very pleasant folks. Back to the phones we go on line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hello, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I've got a question about insulating a chicken coop.
Okay.
Yeah, just bought one 8x12. I've heard different ideas on whether it's good to insulate them or just not insulate them.
Mm.
And I was kind of wondering what your thoughts were on that.
I think there's some merit in insulating them. The dilemma you get into is chickens peck at everything. So if you have exposed foam, they're going to peck it all up.
Right.
But I think it probably helps a lot in the winter. I know I've sold a lot of insulation over the years to folks doing chicken coops. And there's probably a threshold there in terms of how many chickens in a given space.
I'm looking at 25 chickens at 40 to 55 BTUs a piece.
Okay, so it's only 1,000 BTUs an hour. So that's not a lot of heat. So in that case, I'd be inclined to at least insulate it, with a couple of inches of foam, maybe on the sandwiched in between something to protect it on the inside.
Okay.
I think 2 inches of foam is probably a good place to be, but I'd also set it up so you could ventilate it in the summer, because obviously they're going to overheat in the summertime otherwise.
Yeah. What about the floor? I really can't get underneath it to insulate it.
Well, I wouldn't, the nests are up higher. There might be some on the floor. Those guys are going to not be real happy, but the nest has material in it that would tend to be some insulation. So, and I think it would stratify out fairly well in the wintertime. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. If I was doing one from scratch, I would certainly insulate underneath it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, good.
Okay.
That kind of answers my question.
Okay.
Then. Yeah.
Okay. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye. Well, the one other thing I would think about here is the possibility of sandwiching the floor. I've dealt with this with houses where you couldn't get underneath a building on posts, say, and you can't get underneath the floor because there's no clearance. You could sandwich a layer of foam on the room side, put some plywood on top of it, and just screw it together so it's solid, and that would help. And that's kind of what we did in the office that in our new location. The building was on a slab, was not insulated. The slab was not insulated, so we used that building for 5 years, 6 years. We had a wood stove in it, and it was never very comfortable sitting on that uninsulated concrete slab. So what we did in the process of renovating the building was we put a layer of foam down on the floor and put a deck over that. So we're now not sitting on cold concrete. Makes a difference. Let's see. We'll go over to the line. We go, oh, what is it? Oh, boy, a lawnmower. Cub Cadet XT3 has extra large exhaust pipe producing extra loud exhaust note. It's beautiful. It's a very beautiful lawnmower. I do like the Cub Cadets. I'll tell you a quick sidebar story. Last year, this time, when my lawnmower would not start, my friend Wayne loaned me his Cub Cadet. Beautiful machine, hardly used. And I mowed the lawn a couple times. And I returned it. I brought it back to him. And it seemed like it wasn't moving very well. It was kind of sluggish. And it, at times, it didn't seem like it was moving the way it should, a hydrostatic transmission. I brought it back, and he calls me, says, it's not moving. And what happened? I thought, nothing. I used the machine. I noticed it was a little sluggish. So I think I went and got the machine back, brought it back. I said, look, if I have to replace the transmission, I will. Well, it was low on fluid, and it was tricky to get into, but when I discovered, you know, I got online and got the service data on it and put fluid in the transmission, and go figure, it worked. So it must have just been at the cusp when I got it that maybe it leaked a little bit over the winter. I think I put a little bit of leak sealer in it if the seals were a little wonky. It was a relatively new machine, but once we did that, it was great, and I do like those machines a lot. So, I appreciate the picture. And I still don't understand why they can't be quiet. Certainly, I guess maybe a one-cylinder engine has to be a little bit noisier, but you could still probably muffle that, can't you? Am I missing something there in that equation that I don't understand? If I am, please, somebody out there enlighten me. No phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line going, 601. 207-4478. If you'd like to call or text in, feel free. I'm going to peek out the window here. It is does not yet appear to be sunny in Bangor, Maine, but it will be, I'm sure, shortly, and it will be down on the coast today. What a great day to ride down and pick up all those free foam insulation panels. One day deal. We got a phone call. Huh? Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning. I'd like to talk about tankless hot water heaters.
Sure.
Electric.
Go right ahead. What would you like to know?
What is the best one to buy? What should I get the most money out of? How much should I expect to spend?
Well, all good questions. The tankless water heater, the first thing you were looking for is, I don't think you want to go with an off-brand, and you want a really good warranty because they tend to burn out.
Great.
And you know, the beauty of an electric tankless is a good one is not a cheap date. They sort of heat water as water passes through them, but not to any great flow. So you're not going to fill the bathtub up at 5 gallons a minute with an electric tankless water heater. Because let's just do some math real quick. Let's say you've got a 40 amp breaker. So you've got 40 amps times 240 volts. Let's call that 10,000 watts, 10 kilowatts. That's 34,000 BTUs an hour that it would deliver. A tankless gas water heater does about 100 to 180,000 BTUs an hour, and that can handle flow as it passes through. At 34,000 BTUs an hour, you're kind of limited in how much heating you're going to accomplish. But the beauty of it is it only heats when it's on. And maybe if you're doing lavatories or something, or washing dishes with relatively low flow rates, it's going to be fine. A shower with a really low flow shower head will be reasonable. But that's, you know, you're going to have a limitation there when it comes to an electric unit. And concentrating that much energy in what is a very small device, they do tend to fail, so that's why I say the warranty is critical. I haven't used any lately. The ones I did use years ago all failed prematurely. But they are better. I will say this. They are better than they used to be.
Yeah, so a gas would be a better way of going then.
Gas, I think, would be a good choice. If you're just looking to use it in a regular household, Renai, Takagi, and Noritz are the three that I recommend. They're all good units.
I was looking at a Renai.
Yep. And they've been around a long time. They got service here in the state of Maine, and parts are readily available.
Yeah, my house is all electric though right now, so I'd have to bring in a tank and sign a contract with somebody.
What's good about the electric is if you had a preheat from something like a solar system or you had a wood system where it was bumped up, say, 20, 30 degrees warmer than what it comes in from the street, the electric would do a reasonable job for you. Otherwise,
I'm not really that fond of cold showers.
I would suggest just using a regular tank, 40-gallon electric water heater. I think, unless you have a really high need, they're well insulated with foam. They're relatively inexpensive and probably will last as long as a tankless.
Well, what I had a problem with is that my 40-gallon hot water heater right now, electric, is in this little cubby hole that's in a double-wide house.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to put a water filtration system in, too, and I thought the Renai heater would take up less room. I could get in both the water filter system and the heater in the same little hole.
Yep.
But I may have to build on.
That might be the easier solution.
Right.
Okay.
Either that or don't take showers.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would recommend taking showers.
All right, thanks
okay.
a lot, Tom.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Yeah, it is a limitation. There's few situations where I can see where tankless electric works. One where you got like a just hand washing kind of things going on, it might be a good, really good solution. Of course, a tank, well insulated tank heater doesn't have that much standby loss, all things considered. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. This is Jim over here in Warren.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Jim?
Good, good, good. Enjoying the sunshine this morning.
Good.
Hey, listen, my brother's building a house, and he has the garage workshop is going to be underneath the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the walls are up, and the next step is going to be the slab floor.
Mm.
Gravel's in. Should we put down plastic first before the pour?
Definitely. And
okay.
And don't be cheap on the plastic. Get something with some thickness to it. It does. As a matter of fact, most lumber yards sell underlayment plastic that is pretty substantial stuff, and it does make a difference. The good news is that, you know, even if it's got a lot of little punctures in it from the stone, it's still probably 98% better than not having it, especially
right
in terms
touch.
Of moisture coming up through.
Good, good, good. Okay, I don't think he's going to insulate it. I don't think he's worried about it to that level.
Okay.
But I wanted to double check on that.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. Okay, Jim, good to hear from you.
Very good. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you sometime. Thanks. Bye-bye. Right. Yep, we got to run because we are just about out of time, and if I hit the tune there, the tune machine with Mr. Francis Albert, I think we can bid you adieu to next week. Enjoy the weather today. At least it's not raining today. Not raining right now. Take care.